Esther chapter 2. We have a little business to tend to in Esther 2. And then, time permitting, we'll get into Esther 3. Because we had covered most all of chapter 2. Let's pick up the reading in verse 19. Esther 2, verse 19. And when the virgins were gathered together the second time, then Mordecai sat in the king's gate. Esther had not yet showed her kindred nor her people, as Mordecai had charged her. For Esther did the commandment of Mordecai, like as when she was brought up with him. In those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh, of those which kept the door, were wroth, that means angry, and sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the thing was known to Mordecai, who told it unto Esther the queen. And Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. And when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out. Therefore, they were both hanged on a tree. And it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. Now, in your outline, if you still have that, we've already covered the first segment of the outline, God's providence in the bad things. And now we've covered already God's providence in the good things. Now this last section of the chapter, and this part of the story, we've put a title on this to sum it up as God's providence in the little things. Some things we might think were little or insignificant, which really are turning points in the story or will be big deals in the story. This is the way God works in our lives. Maybe somebody you meet and you say, why did I meet that person? Why did I go down that street? Why was I led to make that phone call? Wonder why I was introduced to that family. There's all kinds of things that happen in our lives, and that's just to suggest our thoughts. I could tell you my own story, but that would take up a lot of time. But I can tell you, and I'm sure you could tell me and others, there have been those incidents in your life, have there not? Where you have met someone, you've gone somewhere, you made a phone call or received a phone call, you went to one place, and maybe it wasn't the right place, but you were asking directions, and you found somebody who told you what you needed to know. And all kinds of little things in life that are really big things, they turn out to be very big. I don't know who said it, but it's a good way of looking at it, that big doors swing on little hinges. And so it is in this story for sure, and I think in all of our life stories. Mordecai, look at this point A in this section. Mordecai was in the right place at the right time. We're told that in verse 19 that he sat in the king's gate. The gate was more than just a gate. The gate was the place of transactions. It was a place of importance. The best we could probably liken it to in our day, it would be like City Hall or a courthouse, a place where you went to transact important business, you know, to get licenses or to check something official or to take care of paying something or something that was important. This is where they did business in that day in the king's gate, or in the gate of the city. So Mordecai apparently had some kind of position or some reason for being there. It could be that he was just on some kind of business, or it could be that he was actually there and that was his place to be. It seems like that may be the case, though we don't want to read too much into it. The fact that he was sitting there would indicate perhaps that he had official business, and that was his normal place to go. But we won't stretch that. We'll just suggest that. But we know that it happened for a reason that he was there because of what is yet to unfold. The thing we see in the second place, letter B, is that Mordecai overheard a plot to assassinate the king. And we're told that in verse 21, the relationship of Esther and Mordecai, and the fact that Esther had not made known she was a Jewish lady, as Mordecai charged her, it says in verse 20, it also says that she did the commandment of Mordecai. Notice this, students, I think it's good. It's not an accident you're here. It says that she did the commandment of Mordecai. She's a grown woman now, but it makes reference to it, almost like it goes out of its way, here the text, to tell us, like as when she was brought up with him. So this was the habit she was in as a girl, growing up under the foster care of her cousin Mordecai. She listened to Mordecai. She followed his instruction. Now she's a grown woman, and she's the queen. And yet when her foster father said something, she took it to heart. She didn't dismiss it and say, I'm a grown woman now. And there's a lot to be said here for this. It just shows you a lot about Esther's submissive spirit, doesn't it? That she listened to what Mordecai told her about not making it known that she was a Jew. And we're not told why, but she followed his command. That's what it's called, a command. It wasn't a suggestion, it was a commandment. And she listened, and it plays an important part in the story later on, because the king does not know she's a Jew. And obviously this man, Haman, we're going to run into in chapter 3, he does not know that. And so it's good that it's hidden, and it's good that she listened. All big part of the story. Now, that brings us to what we just saw in the outline here in verse 21, that Mordecai, when he was sitting at the king's gate, he overheard two of the king's chamberlains, that is, people who had access to the king in his royal residence, and they were upset with the king to the point they were going to knock him off. Now, we understand what that's like. It wasn't too awful long ago that an assassination attempt on a former president took place. And let's be honest, that was shocking to everybody. That is shocking when that happened. So this was something that was out of the ordinary, to say the least. And it was no accident. It was a providential thing that Mordecai overheard this being planned. I couldn't help but think of that slogan, and we've heard it ever since 9/11, and it's still, I think, in force. You don't hear it as much, of course, as you did back in 2001 in the aftermath of that, but it's still commonly used. You know what I'm talking about. If you see something, say something, right? If you hear something, say something. That is, if something suspicious, especially if you're in a big city or a public place like an airport or a bus terminal or, you know, any kind of public transportation, they remind you of that. If you see something, say something. Well, that's what's going on here. He heard something, and he let it be known what was going on, this plot to assassinate the king. And it was told to Esther, the queen, the news from Mordecai to the queen. And then Esther made sure that it was reported that it was Mordecai that was responsible for that tip. That's what we would call it, isn't it? A tip. That something was plotted against the king. And so that's what it means in the last part of verse 22. Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. And so then they had a little investigation. It's called here in the King James, Inquisition. They did some fact-finding and detective-type work and found out it was true. And then, boy, they took care of that. Swift justice, wouldn't you say? Hanged on a tree. That ended that threat. And then this little detail in verse 23 at the very end, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. That is, it was noted in the official record that this came to light. Mordecai gave the tip, and the king's life was spared, and the men who was plotting this were taken out and hanged. So, a lot of little things here. The overhearing of the plot, and then the last thing that you see there, Mordecai's good deed was recorded, but not immediately rewarded. In other words, there was no fanfare. Boy, wow, Mordecai, what a great thing. There was nothing said, nothing done, only recorded. But it's going to be rewarded eventually, and it's going to be a key part of the story. And as your notes suggest, God would take care of that at the right time. That's God's providence, that God does the right thing at the right time in the right way, and He's working in ways we just can't imagine. Because we don't know the right time. We don't know the right way. But whenever something like that does happen, it ought to cause us to step back and say, why was I privy to that? Why did I hear that? Why did I see that? And if it's something, of course, that's a potential threat, we ought to do exactly like the authorities tell us to do. If you see something, say something. You know, there's no need to wait, because it could be a timely thing. If you hear something, say something. And there's no telling how many threats have been averted because that was followed through by people who were that set of eyes or ears, and God used that to, no telling, save lives. But the thing is, as the note suggests, the lesson is be faithful to your duty and God will reward you in due time. May not be something of this nature, but this is a principle that holds true. Here it is, Galatians 6:9. Let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. So two important things happen in chapter 2 as we close out chapter 2. Esther became the queen, and Mordecai saves the king's life. And then there is a 10-year period that the events of Esther cover. You see the dates, 483 to 473 B.C. And then the notations there, you can look them up. Esther 1-2, it dates it the third year of the king's reign. Chapter 2, verse 16, the seventh year of the king's reign. Same king, different queen, but same king, Ahasuerus, also known as Xerxes. We've covered that. And chapter 3 will be the 12th year of the king's reign. So you see the span of time. Now look at this next paragraph. In God's providence, bad things turn out to be good things. Little things turn out to be big things. Overlooked things turn out to be important things. And all things turn out to be God-directed things. God's providentially working all things together for His glory and the good of His people, and is working in His wise way and in His perfect timing. That summarizes the doctrine of God's providence right there. He's working in the good things, the bad things, the little things, the big things, working behind the scenes, working in ways you can and cannot see, working in ways you know and don't know, to work out His perfect plan for His glory, for our good. Wow. That's good. I didn't know we had that visual. Good visual. I mean the top part. Book of Esther. Thank you, sound booth. Whoever came up with that. Don't you think that's good? Yeah. Esther. It's all about the king and queen, but not really. It's about the King of Kings. That's what it's all about. Now the question, do you see evidence of God's providence in your life? That's a loaded question. That's a question that I hope you can say, yes, I do. One of the quotes down near the bottom there is a quaint way of saying it, but I hope we get the truth of that little middle quote by Thomas Watson. That's the way the Puritans said things, in kind of an unusual way, but what a truth. Providence is a Christian's diary, but not his Bible. That is, your diary is what's already happened. You record it as it happens. So providence, you don't know providence until you see it play out. And sometimes you don't really fully understand it till you look back and say, man, that was God all along. Now I see why that happened like that happened. Because it may be somebody you met or something that happened years ago that the full effect of it doesn't come home until, you know, years later or at least months later. But it's not our Bible, because you can't read the tea leaves. We're not supposed to sit around and say, well, what is God up to here? What providence was never meant for that. The Bible is our guidebook, right? It's a lamp unto our feet and a light unto our path. Love the way the Puritans put stuff. A good quote down, all three of those are very good quotes. Valley of Vision is a book of Puritan prayers and devotions. Highly recommend that to you. Highly recommend that to you. It will cause you to think and ponder. W.J. Townsend, the last quote, the vastness of the sway of providence cannot be imagined. It ranges from the archangel to the microbe, from the highest heavens to the humblest anthill. Nothing is too large for his grasp. Nothing is small enough to elude his notice. So God's obviously involved in the big things, but he's involved in the little things that actually become big things. Marvelous thing. Now let's go to chapter 3. We'll read just a little bit of it anyway and be introduced to Haman. Notice it says, after these things. So a lot's happened the first two chapters. After these things did King Ahasuerus promote Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes that were with him. Well, you would expect if anybody had got a promotion there, it would have been Mordecai, but that's not what it says. It's another guy named Haman, and we're going to see this guy was pure evil. So as you're reading here, and it didn't take long to read into chapter 3, that you see this guy's no good. No. He's like a Hitler type figure. And yet he's the one that got the promotion. So we're not going to have time to say everything we'd like to say here. But I want to say this while we do have time. You ever wonder why good things happen to bad people and bad things happen to good people? We've all wondered that. And yet right here it is. Mordecai's good deed apparently is overlooked. No promotion for him. Oh, it was written in a book, but, you know, as far as we know, and just reading the story, that's going to be the end of it. It was just recorded. Mordecai uncovered the plot to assassinate the king. And so it's done and over. No, not by a long shot. But here's Haman, a guy who is an evil figure for sure, who gets a promotion. And he's the top man under the king. Now verse 2. And all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. So the king made it known, you are to bow before Haman. But Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. Now why would Mordecai not bow? Because he was a Jew, and he knew that that was not right for him to bow to a man in a worshipful way, in a reverential way. And so he's just doing what a good believer, a Jew of that time, would do, should do. And let's read a little further. We're about out of time, but we'll read it and then we'll have to stop. Then the king's servants, which were in the king's gate, said unto Mordecai, why transgressest thou the king's commandment? Now it came to pass, when they spake daily unto him, and he hearkened not unto them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's matters would stand, for he had told them that he was a Jew. There you go. So now it's coming to light. Mordecai is Jewish. As a part of that, he had convictions. Remember, this is what got Daniel in trouble. Remember in the book of Daniel? He would not bow to the image. Everybody else was bowing, but not Daniel. And here's Mordecai not bowing. And you know, if everybody else is bowing and you're not bowing, you literally stand out. Because you're not bowing, you're standing. And when you stand and everybody else is bowing, you stand out. And that's often what happens in a believer's life. We know that. A lot of lessons here. But we'll come back to this, and please don't feel like we're forsaking this truth because the other truth is more important. All of the Bible is important. And I know we're, you know, in a flow of thought, but we'll come back to this, and it will be there. And I encourage you to read that and study that. You'll find it very worthwhile.